money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. He gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Locked On NBA crossover podcast today. Here we are recapping the end of the series between the Washington Wizards and Toronto Raptors, Raptors 1-6. I am Noah Getzel from Locked On Wizards, and we are here today with Sean Woodley. What's going on, Sean? Locked On Raptors host. How you feeling?
Pretty good, man. Gotta say. It was very tense in Game 6. I was not ready for another Game 7. The Leafs just played a Game 7 this week and lost. The Raptors have had a couple Game 7s in recent years that were just, like, arduous and terrible and not at all fun to enjoy. So I got to say, I'm feeling pretty good that the series got wrapped up in 6. There's a few days off. About to watch Game 7. Pacers Cavs. And I feel pretty good. So, yeah, can't complain.
And you said you don't really care who wins Game 7. Your brain logically would say that, you know, like, you want to play the Pacers because you don't want to face LeBron James, but then it's also sort of like the rite of passage type thing where if you beat LeBron, you can beat anyone.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for narrative and stuff, I guess, and, like, the idea of beating LeBron and, you know, because, like, he looks pretty vulnerable right now, at least the Cavs do as a whole. I mean, LeBron himself is still ridiculous, but the rest of the team is kind of butt, so if that's what happens and the Raptors lose to LeBron, like, there's no shame in losing to LeBron because everyone loses to LeBron, but if they beat him, that'd be kind of cool. And, I'm pretty neutral going into this Game 7. I'm just excited to watch the anxiety of two fan bases unfold in front of me.
So if there's, like, one word or one theme that you thought was, like, the key to your Raptors series and, you know, the Raptors coming out on top, is there any, like, key over the course of those six games, like one major recurring element that you think beat the Wizards?
That's a good one. Depth, I guess, would be the easy one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, the Raptors, even without Fred VanVleet, like, they had a lot of contributions throughout the series from secondary guys. DeLon Wright had a couple excellent fourth quarters and figured into a lot of, you know, some of the more, you know, tide-changing runs that took place in the series. He had that Game 5 where he had the lob finish, he had the three, had the steal and Euro step on John Wall. Like, he was excellent. And then he had C.J. Miles, who even... I thought C.J. Miles' contributions to this series are probably going to go understated. He was really good in Games 1 and 2, hit a bunch of shots. And then after that, he kind of went cold. But the threat of C.J. Miles and the way the Wizards perceived that threat and sort of threw everything they had at defending him, I think ended up really helping out the Raptors. It was very much the spacing you want from a guy who's a gunner. And even though he was kind of cold, having him out there as opposed to in years past where it was Patrick Patterson or Damari Carroll, where no one really cared to guard them attention. To have C.J. Miles up there and you could kind of leverage the attention being paid to him into, you know, looks for other guys in the court, I think that was a pretty big thing. And then, you know, Pascal Siakam kind of came around late in the series. That was nice to see. Then Fred VanVleet comes back, a dude who sat for six games, minus 3 minutes, and just kind of, even though he was only like 5 points, four boards, you know, he wasn't particularly amazing.
He had a lot of assists, on the stats line. I think.
Yeah, four assists. Yeah, so he wasn't like, he didn't like blow the stat line up, but he was also really good at defense. And just kind of, I think the biggest thing with him is he steadies that second unit and kind of adds an element of creation and shot making and just sort of space, once again, to that unit that wasn't there the entire series when they were running it out with like Norman Powell or whoever else. And I think that kind of swung it. And it was really nice as a Raptors fan to see that unit kind of come together and just like pick up where they left off in the regular season, where it's just all the pieces fit perfectly. And, you know, the Wizards, on the other hand, Otto Porter goes down. Kelly Oubre has to start. He goes 1 of 7 from deep. I think John Wall actually talked about this on Locker Cleanout Day, just kind of, you know, about how the depth on the wing wasn't really there. Obviously, Jody Meek's getting suspended before the series hurts, but...
Not really, because he didn't play much anyway. Like, it was pretty clear he wasn't going to be in the rotation. It was probably going to be, you know, like a 9-man rotation. I guess Ty Lawson came in the playoffs, so he got some of those minutes. But, I mean, Ty Lawson, I'm sure, shot the ball better over the course. I think he was like probably, I can't quite remember. He hit like 5 3-pointers in the series, so not a lot, but he would have shot better than Jody Meeks, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think he was actually 100% from the field, if I'm not mistaken. Felt like it. Actually, Mike Scott was 100% from the field.
At least, yeah. Which was surprising because he scored 8 points in the fourth quarter of, you know, the decisive game six, and then he didn't, I don't know if he attempted another shot after that, but he only played 14-15 minutes. You would have liked to see him, given his contribution throughout the playoffs. He was kind of the one, we'll get to this, like the awards for the playoffs, but he was definitely the sixth man of the postseason for the Wizards. It was a weird, I mean, when you look at the bench, I think depth is probably the best term to describe the difference between these two teams. Maybe a bit of consistency for the Raptors as well. That might be another one word, but like in the final game, 34 points off the bench isn't a ton, but the Wizards only got 20, and, you know, 8 of those came in the first quarter, so clearly not a lot of contributions outside of John Wall and Bradley Beal, which is what hurt them. You get to the fourth quarter, both games 5 and 6, they have no legs left, they can't hit a single shot, and in game 6 especially, they were getting trapped and committing turnovers just because, you know, nobody else could do anything after they got trapped, and you can't, you know, it's hard enough scoring in the fourth quarter against one defender, but when you're trying to, you know, go 1-on-2 and really force it, there's just no shot, there's no pieces around them to make things work. Obviously wing depth, yeah, you don't want your backup point guard Tomas Satoransky trying to play small forward, it's not his natural fit. The Wizards have a lot of roster issues and very limited financial flexibility, so we'll see what kind of trades they make or who they draft this offseason, but it's quite a pickle.
Yeah, well, Mike Scott probably played himself out of being affordable for the Wizards, no? Like, would you not?
Yeah, it was kind of weird because I was with him in the exit interviews yesterday, and, you know, people were asking, like, you know, have you talked to management? Are you interested in signing a deal with the Wizards? And he's just like, you know, it's really early. I'm still waiting to see. So I would think maybe, I don't think he cares whether he's a starter or a sixth man, but I just don't think the Wizards will be competitive in terms of signing him, unless they can get some other contracts off their books, which, you know, will take some financial finagling a little bit, because it would be great to keep him. He was the one player, among the additions that John Wall actually liked, because he mentioned, you know, what's his name? I'm blanking on him. So he was like, Tim did what he can. He had his moments. He said Jody. Yeah, that's the guy whose name I was forgetting. Jody, you know, he contributed what he could before he went through it all with the suspension. And then he said Mike was great. And so that's the only compliment for the new edition. He didn't really specifically mention Ty Lawson, but it's tough to make too much of a judgment after playing with a guy for, what, like 2 weeks? Yeah, so definitely Wall, if he was GM, we'll talk to about this at the end in terms of next steps for the Wizards, but I think his number one move would be get rid of Gortat, probably get rid of Meeks, of course, because he wanted to trade earlier, and then probably trade Otto Porter and figure out what else he can do, but I don't know. He said, like, I didn't go to school for managing contracts, I just want better players around me. That's as simple as that. So let's talk about the MVP and greatest disappointment, and maybe what other awards you want to come with. I'm sure coach of the series goes to, that one's not even close, that's Dwayne Casey. So in terms of the MVP, do you give it to Lowry or DeRozan?
I give it to Lowry. I know DeRozan had the bigger scoring games in games 2 and 5 were his big ones, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, like, I, I don't know. Kyle was just so... If you wanted to have, like, one word to describe the series, another one, you could just say Lowry, really. I think what he did in the series was kind of... It fed into what I've kind of thought about his playoff performances in the past, and I've always kind of thought they've been more tied to his health than they've ever been tied to some sort of mental block where he can't perform in the playoffs. He's just been broken down in the playoffs, and I think we saw it, and I think Game 6 was a great example of how they've used Kyle to great effect this season. You know, we played 32 minutes in a clincher, and that was all they needed him for, because Van Vliet was out there. He could absorb 19 minutes, and Wright could play 24, and the bench could kind of go without giving up huge runs and giving up the lead and actually sort of get back leads and things like that, where you didn't have to have Lowry out there for 40 minutes in the game. And for him to go 24-6-6 on 9-15, 3-7 from deep, I think he shot 44% from deep in the series with like a 61.7 true shooting. No, I think there were some people out there saying that like Kyle Lowry wasn't having a good series, and I think if that's your take, you didn't watch the series, because he did pretty much everything that makes Kyle Lowry Kyle Lowry. He finished with 17-8-5. And the defense he played on both John Wall, but I think especially Bradley Beal in the series, were exceptional. And for him to have the energy to both do that on the defensive end and also sort of be the secondary option on offense, I thought he just did everything that makes Kyle Lowry the engine of this team. And he, you know, put, I think, a lot of sort of demons to bed in terms of his past, playoff performances from recent years. And obviously there's still another round to come, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, I was just so impressed with Kyle Lowry in the series. And as great as DeRozan was, I still think I'd take Kyle over DeMar. But at the same time, DeMar has a case considering how the Wizards defended him, right? I mean, the Wizards, I think, they were kind of daring DeMar in a couple of those games, in particular games 2 and 5, to beat him. They were, you know, being a little bit more aggressive defensively with Lowry. They were trapping him a little bit more often. They stopped trapping DeMar after game 1, and were just like, all right, dude, you're going to beat us from 18 feet? Fine, we try to do it. And then he did it. And that was, I think, the, you know, especially in game 5, where the offense wasn't really there outside of DeMar. And then he has like 30 points on 20 shots through three quarters. And then finally the defense softens up a bit. They go to that super small lineup. And DeMar doesn't really factor into the fourth quarter. But, you know, all he did to get the Raptors there, I mean, he's the reason they were up 1 going into the fourth, you know, to begin with. So I think he had a really great series. A couple of bad shooting nights probably throw that off a little bit. But I think given what the defense was asking of him to do, I think he did about as well as you could expect. But I'd still say Kyle for both ends of the floor and just his shooting and just, like, the crazy, you know, he had that diving play in game six, where he started to break going the other end in the fourth quarter. That was like kind of a convincing play, deciding play in the game. Kyle Lowry, man, he's really, really good.
Yeah. It's definitely neck and neck between them, but I think when you look at the whole body of work and some of the poor shooting percentages that DeRozan had, even though, you know, like 44% overall and 39% from three-point range, that's all good, 81% of his free throws, but I can understand that, you know, Lowry is indeed the heart of the team. And along the same lines for the Wizards, you know, he's not MVP of the series because his team lost, but it looked like the best player on the court was John Wall, which was, you know, impressive because he had played, I think, like 3 or 4 or something, maybe like less than 5 regular season games after he came back from injury, and then he averaged 26 points, 11.5 assists, 5.7 rebounds, and 2.3 steals. I'm sure he had some block shots in there as well. You can say what you wish about his fourth quarter shooting, his turnovers, and from three-point line, he only shot 19%, but clearly, you know, you look at, like, game 4, for example, when the Wizards were on the ropes and lost Bradley Beal due to foul trouble, he was the one who led the back and was responsible for, like, every field goal in the fourth quarter, so clearly John Wall showed that he's worth that max money extension he signed last offseason for now. Well, I guess he missed half the season, so durability might come into play, but I think, you know, his playoff performance kind of shuts the door on this guy's injured, this guy, you know, he has too many issues in his game. So although the Wizards didn't win it, you know, it's a whole team. It's not just one guy who's able to lead a team to victory, given all the Wizards' inconsistencies, and they had some injury problems. As much as Jody Meeks sucked this year, it was another guy that they couldn't, you know, get to the bench and lean on. So that was a factor. What award do you want to go with next? Do you want to do sixth man? Because for me, it's definitely Mike Scott. 10.8 points a game, 3.5 rebounds. Didn't do a ton of other stuff besides scoring off the bench. But, you know, when you shoot 63% and 64% from beyond the arc, you don't miss a free throw. That's a pretty good spark off the bench, in my opinion.
Yeah, before we get to Scott, I just wanted to kind of touch on what you were saying about Wall, and I agree. I thought he was really good in this series, and he scared the hell out of me a lot of the time. Sorry, autoplay videos. I think the thing about Wall that impressed me was, there's a few things. First of all, like, he is just such a terror in transition, right? Like, he just, and the Raptors, when they got lazy with turnovers or they were having all these long misses that they weren't getting offensive boards on, and Wall was, you know, starting the fast break himself, it was horrifying. Like, that was, I think, where most of the scoring came for the Wizards in this series. The other thing, too, about Wall was the Raptors were kind of daring him to shoot mid-range shots a lot of the time in this series, and he did it pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I think shot well, but like looking at his shot charts right now, he was definitely well above his 29% from mid-range that he shot in the regular season. There's one spot on the floor here on the right sort of elbow area. He shot 10 of 13, 77%. He absolutely burned the Raptors every time they let him go right and shoot that 18-footer. And
he got that spot from Paul Pierce, actually. That used to be his sweet spot, and he taught him.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Don't need to talk about Paul Pierce. It's a happy podcast for me. But yeah, no, I thought the way Wall kind of adjusted his, he didn't adjust. He stayed with the same shot profile, essentially, but he just hit them more effectively and kind of made it so he burned the Raptors for ceding those shots to him. I thought that really sort of, you know, threw a wrench into the Raptors' plan. So yeah, Wall for sure is their MVP. And yeah, with the sixth man, Mike Scott, I never, ever, ever want to see Mike Scott ever again. It was exhausting. He was really good in this series. He shot 63% from deep, 63% overall. I mean, it was... I really hope Mike Scott gets paid because he deserves it. I hope he gets paid by a team that the Raptors will never play in the playoffs, either a bad team in the East or somewhere out West, because he has added himself to like a list of like inexplicable dudes who cook the Raptors all the time. Like, he's on the Gerald Henderson list now, which is among Raptors fans is rarefied air. So congrats to Mike Scott on that, I suppose. I have a hard time picking who I thought the best Raptors reserve was. Do you have a take on that?
It's probably between DeLon Wright and Pascal Siakam, I think.
Oh yeah, I guess it's not that hard. DeLon Wright was awesome. What am I saying?
But like, I mean, when you look defensively, I think like it's hard to say that anyone was better defensively for the Raptors than Pascal. Off the bench, at least.
The possessions he guarded John Wall were super fun. I gotta say that. I didn't think we'd see much of that, to be honest, considering, you know, Lowry and OG did a pretty good job on him, and I figured they'd just have, like, DeLon guard him most of the time when the bench was in. But to have Siakam sort of throw a different look at him, I think there were times where Wall was kind of startled by how quick Siakam is and how he just couldn't blow by him. But for me, I think Siakam, his early part of the series was kind of ineffective, and his offense was not really there. And this was definitely a series where the Wizards were looking at the scouting report and saying, oh, Pascal Siakam shoots 20% on like two attempts a game. We're definitely not guarding him. And I think they kind of neutralized a lot of what he does off the dribble and stuff like that. So, he's got a lot of room to grow. He'll be fine. But that's definitely a weakness that got exposed in this series. I don't know why I was confused. DeLon Wright was so good in the series. He had a couple sort of wonky offensive games, but his defense overall was really nice. And, the threes he hit, he shot like 47% from threes in this series. Like, that is so crucial and kind of what the Raptors have been missing in playoff runs past. And I think DeLon Wright easily is the Raptors' sixth man of the series.
Yeah, no doubt. Who would you say is the biggest disappointment?
On the Raptors?
Yeah. Ibaka, maybe?
Probably Serge Ibaka. Okay.
Does OG contribute a lot over the course of like the regular season? Because he averaged 7.8 points. He hit his threes 47%.
Is this OG Houston?
Yeah, OG. I'm saying like, were his playoff numbers comparable to what his role on the team throughout the regular season? Like 8 points, 2 rebounds?
He did more in the playoffs than he did in the regular season.
Okay.
Yeah, he OG was probably on the list of guys who I was most impressed by. Really, yeah. That dude wasn't shook. He, you know, he took threes with confidence, which was kind of an issue in the regular season at times. He had that pull-up three in game six that was like, oh, okay, he's doing this now, all right. And, like, his cutting, I think, was just such a nice little sort of wrinkle that was thrown into the offense. He had, like, three or four dunks on cuts on the baseline that were crucial. And, yeah, so I was not at all disappointed by OG. It's probably Serge. Even though I think his defense was mostly pretty good in this series, even though the offense kind of got away from him in the last four games, when he pulled up for that three in game six, like, around a screen, like, why? was my reaction. This was like a super slow motion version of a point guard pulling up a three, and it was not effective at all. Kind of killed a little bit of momentum the Raptors had going. I think they were down three at that time. It was a chance to tie, and, like, that's the shot you get? Like, come on, Serge.
You would think he could contribute, like, be much more of an X factor in this series because, you know, the, like, Wizards don't really have fast power forwards or centers who could, you know, make him, like, he didn't really make the Wizards defenders work. He did in game one because he was, you know, hitting his threes, but after that, there was very little. He wasn't really protecting the rim the same way you would have thought. It was mainly Valanciunas and Jakob Poeltl who were the rim protectors for a team. So, you know, Ibaka became kind of dispensable.
Yeah, I think a lot of Ibaka's struggles were kind of circumstance related. For some reason, Dwayne Casey played him a lot with Jakob Poeltl, and that lineup just hasn't worked all season long. And so it was pretty annoying and frustrating that went was gone back to, you know, pretty frequently throughout this series, and I think that probably hurt his numbers a bit. And also, kind of like C.J. Miles, I think, you know, we talked about how the Wizards were defending DeMar DeRozan. I think, you know, the way the Wizards were defending everyone, you know, in concert with how they were approaching DeRozan, I think they kind of cut off a lot of opportunities for Ibaka. Ibaka's a guy who gets a lot of pick-and-pop threes, and those, you know, angles and passes just weren't there for DeMar to make. I think the Wizards did a good job of trying to key in on Ibaka, especially after his game one where he went off. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened with Valanciunas as well. I mean, Jonas had a great series, but, you know, there were times, especially in DeRozan's bigger games, where they were just swarming Valanciunas on the roll, not allowing him to be a target at all, and just forcing DeMar to shoot it. So I think part of it's circumstance. Maybe it changes in a different matchup. I'd like to see Ibaka play the five a little bit more often. I think we saw that in game two, and that was really effective. Didn't really see it elsewhere in the series, but I think in the next round, depending who the Raptors play, and by the time people hear this, maybe we already know, but I think he will be, you know, probably more of a factor. And if he's not playing well, if he's missing his shots the way he did, although he still shot like 40% from three in the series, which is kind of inexplicable to me, but if he's taking those little dumb turnaround jumpers and stuff and not really, you know, catching balls, like, that was, I think, the biggest thing for me. It was just the dumb turnovers and the inability to sort of catch a pass. That kind of got to me, but maybe we should have expected it because he was inconsistent all season. I was banging the drum that Ibaka is a playoff player who doesn't really care about the regular season, considering all the wars he's been in the last decade or so with OKC. And so I was just expecting him to save it for the playoffs. And then game one, I was like, oh, I'm vindicated. And then after that, it was just kind of a lot of what we saw in the regular season. But once again, kind of speaks to the depth of the Raptors that they're, you know, in theory, their third best player when he's engaged, didn't have a very good series aside from one game or two games. He was good in game two. Yet they still ended up pulling it out in six. So, yeah, Ibaka is my biggest disappointment. Who's yours for the Wizards?
I was wondering your opinion, because there's four guys who I'm kind of deciding between, and those guys are Otto Porter, Markieff Morris, Kelly Oubre, and Marcin Gortat. And Marcin, you know, he's like 33 years old. You can't really expect too much from him. He ended up averaging, he wasn't great. he had one game with 0 points, 8.7 points, and 6.3 rebounds. Just 0.33 blocks. So that's like, how many games is that? In six games, yeah, he had like two blocks. That's not very good. And then what's real unfortunate for Porter was he just wasn't healthy throughout the series. And of course, he had like that emergency surgery before game six. So he averaged 10 points and 5 rebounds. He also had 1.2 steals and a block a game. Markieff, you would have loved to see more out of him. He wasn't really like, you know, he had that intentional foul, or he started some drama in game two, and then he just really went away from that bully personality afterward. I guess he had 15 rebounds in game six, but, you know, only 12 points, three in the second half. So he could have contributed a lot more. He ended up with 9.8 points and 7.5 rebounds over the course of the series. And then Oubre, although he was a spark plug, he just couldn't hit a shot. So he scored, you know, 9.3 points, which is good. He got some, a steal a game, not bad, 3.8 rebounds, but 21% shooting from downtown. That really hurts, because when you have Wall and Beal penetrating, getting to the rim, and everyone collapses, you know, you're going to have open shooters. He just needs someone to hit it up. If he hit like a third of his threes instead of 21%, it would have been a big difference, just because he was such a volume shooter. You know, there were games where he's shooting like 107 from three-point line. So it's tough between those four. I guess I would have to say Porter was a disappointment, just because, like, last year, for example, he was healthy, and he's kind of struggled with these hip issues and lower leg issues stemming from the hip issues throughout not just his career, but even his time when he was back at Georgetown. So it's sad to see him not doing what he's capable of, because usually he's, you know, getting steals, getting offensive rebounds, sprinting out in transition, hitting those wing threes, corner threes all the time. So when he's not able to move, he looks a lot more like, you know, John Wall off the ball, someone who just stands there and can, well, Wall can't really hit threes, but Otto's a good standstill shooter. You would love to see him be more active, and that's what he can do. He's usually like, you know, the hyped up Kelly Oubre type, but just, you know, a better version of Kelly Oubre, because he has, you know, he's more mature and understands the game a little bit better. He doesn't make some of those, not rookie, I guess Kelly's in his third year, but, you know, he doesn't make those same mistakes. So, I think Otto is the biggest disappointment, just because, you know, it's not his fault, but he was injured and couldn't contribute as much as you would like your max money player to be doing. And a lot of people have beef with Otto because he's making all this money and he's, you know, putting up the same numbers as he did before the money, but, you know, you can't really expect a person to change the way they play just because they're earning more money. You can't think they'll be like a one-on-one type scorer, but definitely I was torn at first between those four guys. I think it's Otto at the end of the day. Do you feel like anyone was more disappointing for the Wizards than Otto Porter?
Oh yeah, I think of those four guys, Porter would have been last on my list of disappointments. Just, you know, you factor in the injury, and also, like, he still hit his shots. He was 41% from deep, you know, almost 50% from the field. Yeah, he swung, I think, the third quarter of game four.
I think he had 10 points, yeah.
He hit a couple threes. And, like, his defense on DeMar, even while injured, like, I thought it was pretty good for the most part, especially early on in the series. Like, game one, I think he did a really good job on him. And, you know, they definitely missed him in game six. Like, not having that sort of, you know, you talk about how Kelly Oubre couldn't make a shot. I mean, in those situations where Wall and Beal are kind of penetrating, you kind of can live with cheating a little bit more off of the shooters, because it's Oubre who was shooting 21% as opposed to Porter who was shooting 41%, right?
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, so I think I would put Porter at the bottom of the list. I would say it's between Gortat and Morris for me.
Mm-hmm.
Gortat, I think I might take the cake, just because you saw in the games where he was effective that, you know, how much of a difference he makes. Like, games three and four, he was really good. His screens were illegal, but also very good.
There's no such thing as, like, a legal screen in the NBA. Come on. There's a little bit of feet movement or shoving. It's kind of like holding in football. Like, they can't call it every play, but it happens every play. It's the same deal.
Don't be super egregious with it, and you're not going to get called. And I think, you know, he just, I don't know what it was, whether it was just like a lack of attentiveness on defense or like a lack of sort of oomph when he was rolling to the rim, but he just kind of felt like a non-factor. Wall wasn't really looking for him at all, and maybe that's just kind of a systemic thing with the team that's happened all year. But
you're talking about Gortat right now?
Yeah, Gortat, yeah. I feel like in games three and four, he was really effective, and he was a useful role man, and you saw how sort of much it changes between when he's good and when he's bad, and sort of how the team changes as a construct. So Gortat was there, although I think Markieff Morris was just so bad in this series. Like, I really do. He shot 16% from deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, to play Serge Ibaka to like a dead heat in this series is not a good indictment of how you played. Or it's an indictment of how you played, sorry. And he was just, At times in the series, I was like, why don't the Raptors just, like, do the Tony Allen to him? Because he's not doing anything. He can't really do much off the dribble. He's not a good shooter. He's just kind of a negative out there at all times. And I thought, like, the Wizards would have been much better off just playing Mike Scott over Marquise Morris for most of the minutes. And Morris still outplayed Scott by 9 minutes a game. Like, if you flip those numbers, this might be a different series. I really think that. I think Morris was, like, just an active negative out there at all times.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like maybe I said Porter just because I know what he can contribute, and seeing, like, you know, a shell of himself in the series was a little bit disappointing, but, you know, definitely Gortat and Morris, especially Gortat, just because, like, you can tell he's a dying breed, you know, like, he wasn't as athletic as, you know, he couldn't guard Valanciunas in the post, he couldn't out-rebound him. There were two games where he had 0 points and 2 points, so you could just tell, like, when he's on the court, there's only so much that he can do at this stage of his game. He can get people open with screens. He can occasionally finish on, you know, pick and rolls, but it's just very limited. So, I mean, the Wizards were lucky that the Raptors didn't go small ball too much, and, you know, they basically always had either Jakob Poeltl or Valanciunas, JV, in the game, so, you know, didn't expose Gortat quite as much as it could have, but I definitely think he's on his way out this year somehow, if the Wizards can deal him, because they'll probably do everything they can to get rid of him. Even though everything sounds like it's fine between him and Wall, like, I don't think so. You know, if you mention during the season, hey, I want to retire with the Orlando Magic, like, what kind of message did that send if you're midway through a season? Like, okay, you don't want to be here anymore? Like, what? Why would I want to pass you the ball? Like, all these different things.
It was a very passive aggressive version of Eric Bledsoe at the start of the season. Also, shout out to Marquise Morris, back to Morris, for trying to, like, rile up OG Anunoby, who is, like, the least rileable person in the entire NBA.
Yeah.
He did it twice.
Is there anyone who's a fighter on the Raptors? I guess.
Oh, Serge. I was expecting a Marquise Serge fight in, like, game two. Mm. I really. Like, Serge has thrown multiple punches. He's been suspended twice in the last year for throwing punches. So, I'm pretty surprised that didn't end up coming to blows at some point.
DeLon seems like a guy you don't mess with. Kyle, obviously, being from Philly, he's, you know, he's a little bit tough-minded too. But a couple guys just, you know, don't, whether they're foreign or whatever it is, they just, you know, like, I wouldn't, even though DeMar DeRozan, you know, comes from, like, a gang-ridden Compton neighborhood, he doesn't really give off the vibe that he is trying to be that physical with you, you know?
No, DeMar is extremely zen at all times. It's lovely. Yeah, no, the Raptors aren't, like, a very fight. Like, P.J. Tucker is not on the team anymore, right. So there's less of a fighty vibe, but Serge definitely will. Sometimes it felt like in the regular season, Serge was just trying to get into a fight so he could get ejected and get the night off. that very much felt like a thing, but
there are a few interesting stats I want to pull up. So. Yeah. In terms of three-point shooting, the Wizards only hit 8 a game, which was worst in the playoffs. The Raptors hit 11 a game, which was fourth. The Wizards had averaged, until Game 5, 25.6 assists per game. I'm not sure where that was at the time, but that would be between third and fourth, so they would be fourth if they kept that up. In the last game, they only had 12 assists off 32 field goals. Wall had 8 of those, so they dropped down to fifth place, 23.3, which is still solid. And then both teams were, like, horrible at rebounding compared to their playoff peers. The Raptors were 11th and the Wizards were 13th, both averaging 40 boards a game. Were there any other? I wish I knew the amount of points off the bench your team scored a game, but it seemed like that was a pretty high figure. Do you, just looking back, big picture, anything else that you noticed that kind of made it more mismatched as you thought, or you came into the series thinking it would be a 5-game win for the Raptors, end up being 6. I was calling Wizards in 7, which, it seemed like in game 5 and game 6, even though they started off close games, the Wizards actually were up 12 in the first quarter in game 6, and I thought it was going to be a blowout, but, you know, they're the Wizards. It seemed like it wasn't as close of a series as it could have been, just because the games ended up being pretty close. There was maybe, like, a couple. The Wizards won one by 19, the Raptors won one by 11. But I don't know, it just seemed a little bit more distant, maybe just because it didn't go to a Game 7, but it felt like the Raptors pretty much cruised aside from Games 3 and 4. What are your like major takeaways, stepping back, big picture, from this first-round win for the Raptors?
Yeah, I kind of felt that too. Like, I was never really like worried about whether or not the Raptors were going to win the series. It just kind of felt like when they wanted to kick it in, they always felt like they had like a lineup that Casey was kind of saving for the fourth quarter, or like they just had another gear they could find in the fourth quarter that the Wizards just couldn't find. Because I felt like the Wizards had to do everything they could to stay close. Like Wall had to be superhuman in order for this to be a close series, and he was for big chunks of it. But it kind of just felt like, you know, the Raptors were the one seed for a reason. They were a plus 7.8 net rating in the regular season for a reason, and it kind of felt like they could kind of rest on that and then really kick it in when they had to. I think maybe the most interesting thing for me in terms of looking at like lineups and stuff, I think the Raptors starting five was way better than I would have expected. They had a plus 8.5 net rating in 108 minutes together, a 116.4 offensive rating in those minutes, and you counter that with the starters for the Wizards, they were a minus 10 in 80 minutes of 117.3 defensive rating. Like, that I think kind of told the story, because the bench for the Wizards, I mean, the main bench unit that they used, I guess, most of the time was Lawson, Mahinmi, Oubre, Satoransky, Scott, played 18 minutes. It was a plus 76.2. A lot of their bench units were excellent. The Raptors, not so much until Fred VanVleet came back in. The Lowry and bench unit was pretty good, but other than that, it was, you know, the DeMar and bench was a disaster. It was a minus 63 in 16 minutes. Obviously, these are enormously tiny samples, but, you know, they matter in the course of a playoff series, considering it itself is a small sample. But I think, you know, just the steadiness of the Raptors starters brought to the game every single night, even with Serge not playing particularly well, they just kind of, aside from game six, where they got down early, like, they started well in all in first five games. And I think, yes, the Wizards came back and won games three and four, but the starters, I think, just kind of laid a nice groundwork for everything the Raptors did in this series. And I don't know if I would have expected them to be that good. I mean, they were excellent in the regular season, but you never know how the playoffs are going to change how it all works, if OG Anunoby's going to hit his threes or whatever.
Right.
But it turned out to be very necessary, because the bench wasn't as good as we expected until Game 6. And, you know, the starters really, I think, held up their end of the bargain. And the Wizards starters, on the other hand, I just think were pretty disappointing. And I guess that goes into, you know, Gortat, Morris, and Porter being three of the most disappointing four players in the series for the Wizards.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's a real knife in the back when, in, you know, an elimination game, you're losing to guys who aren't even in the starting lineup. And when you have Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam, and I can't remember, there was one other reserve who played all 12 minutes in the final game of the fourth quarter. Yeah, that would make sense. Tough series for the Wizards. Lots of questions, you know, a very inconsistent year for them. And I think when you were asking what are some of the things that the Wizards need to do now, It's a laundry list, you know. Like, they've got a draft and an athletic big man. They need shooters and wings off the bench. They had no wing depth. They had no backup shooting guard in the playoffs. And get rid of the people who might not want to be there. Meeks, Gortat, Mahimni seems to have, let it all the dirty laundry out in the exit interview. I don't know if he wants to be there anymore. Who knows? He said there's basically just been miscommunication and poor communication, lack of communication between the team all year. The players are ultimately to blame, but like, coaching and ownership hasn't done a good job either. Ideally, sign Mike Scott. You know, he had a great year. It would be good to have him back, especially if he can improve his one-on-one defense and maybe lateral quickness just a little bit and grab some more rebounds. That'd be great. But yeah, the Wizards are in a very difficult position because the team is full of bad contracts. The only good contracts are maybe Markieff Morris and Kelly Oubre, and Satoransky aren't, you know, making too much money and they're contributing, but everyone else, I guess, like, a Beal's contract is potentially tradable because 3 years, like, $75 million. I don't think the Wizards should break up Wall and Beal by any means, but if one of their big three contracts were to get traded, it would be Porter, who's kind of, you know, like, he was injured this year, he's had an injury history, he's not, like, an aggressive scorer. I don't know how many teams would want him. Maybe sell high on Kelly Oubre right now. I don't know. The Wizards have a ton of question marks. And, you know, a few people asked, like, when you're going against the Raptors, like, they're a team that kind of overhauled their whole offensive and defensive philosophies and retooled their bench and all of these different things. And so they, you know, different reporters were asking, do the Wizards have enough with their current core to get over the hump and, you know, win a second round series and make it to the conference finals? And everyone's basically saying, well, you look at all the injuries this year, that's why we struggled. You look at how good our starting five is in terms of their efficiency. So, you know, a few people thought the starters are fine. It's just kind of retooling the bench and making some strides there. Do you have any parting advice for the Wizards?
Stop signing bad contracts. That would be one.
Especially seven-footers who can't move.
Yeah, so, like, the thing about the Wizards is it feels like they're kind of locked in to an extent, unless they can, like, unload some stuff. But, like, I feel like a lot of these contracts, you're going to have to attach some sort of asset to get rid of them. Raptors had to deal with this last summer with Damari Carroll, and considering how little cap space there is out there, considering just sort of the market for a lot of these types of players, you know, big centers. There's two centers who are kind of, you know, relics of the past a little bit on this team. No one's trading for those guys without getting something else in addition. And that sort of feeds into the greater issue with the Wizards, in that they've traded a lot of first-round picks. They haven't done particularly well drafting and filling out the roster the way, say, the Raptors have. And I think that it's going to be hard to get out of this summer unless you, unless you trade a Porter or someone like that. But then what are you getting back for him? And then Wall has the super-duper uber-max coming in the 2019-20 season. You know, next season, you know, I mean, you talk about Joni Meeks not wanting to be around, but he's got a $3.4 million player option next year. Mm. Is Joni Meeks getting more than that anywhere else? I don't know. He might want to keep that.
And he's suspended for 25 games regular season kicks in anyway.
Yeah, so like he might just opt into that, and then the Wizards are stuck there. Jason Smith has a $5.5 million player option. That dude didn't play in the series and barely played in the year. Like, he's taking that money next year for sure. So it's kind of hard unless they unload some of these contracts, but that will, I think, feed into some of their bigger issues if they sort of get aggressive in trying to do that. And I don't really see how they're bringing back all that much in terms of value. They still owe Martell Webster $800,000 next year.
Yeah, he like retired and was like, yeah, I'm going to start my rapping career. And of course, he's still guaranteed money for years and years. It makes absolutely no sense. But, you know, that's what happened when you have Ernie Grunfeld in your front office instead of a guy like Danny Ainge, who you should just never trade with. I think this should be the end of the road for Grunfeld. And it's not going to be, because, you know, there's the argument Wall was injured half the year, but the team still had a ton of issues. You can't win a playoff series with one or two guys. You know, you can't advance far in the postseason without a full team, you know, and lots of guys who contribute. You don't need 10 of them like the Raptors have, or 12 or whatever. I don't know. You probably have like 30 guys who could put on uniform and still bring you to a playoff win, but you need at least seven who can consistently contribute. And the Wizards haven't, you know, their bench is not there yet. And there's a lot of question marks and no flexibility from a financial perspective. So, yeah, lots and lots of bad contracts. It's been miserable for Wizards fans. And if they come back with the same core, it's just a big, okay, I give up to all the fans out there. It's like, we're happy being mediocre. We're happy trying to get 44 wins, and that's it.
In fairness to Ernie Grunfeld,
what?
Todd Lawson made $8,313 as an NBA player this season, and I think he very much overshot that value in his playoff series. So that's good. That's his value signing.
Yeah.
If you want to look at it that way.
Okay.
But yeah, Wall and Beal are really good, and I think there's always going to be hope with a team that has those guys at the top. Like, John Wall is excellent, and he terrifies me. He's one of the few guys who scares the living daylights out of me when
even
he's
in the fourth quarter.
Maybe not so much, but he, you know, he was instrumental in all of the good things the Wizards did in this series for the most part.
Right.
And as long as you have those two guys, you have a shot. And I think the Raptors are kind of an example of how you can kind of restructure around two guys. At the same time, the Raptors always had more cap flexibility than what the Wizards have right now, and it's going to be for them. But here's hoping that, you know, I don't wish for anyone to be fired, but Ernie Grunfeld probably shouldn't have this job anymore. And here's hoping they can bring someone in to kind of figure out this mess, because it doesn't look good right now. But, I mean, again, Beal and Wall are really good, and they're always going to give you a shot, I think.
Mm-hmm. And the other question is, like, do the Wizards need a better veteran presence, or is the leadership with, you know, Wall and Beal enough? And, of course, you don't want to necessarily add veterans because the Wizards were already one of the oldest teams in the postseason, but it's just a maturity issue. They didn't play hard every night. They overlooked a lot of opponents who ended up beating them, and these were not tough opponents. They were teams like the Atlanta Hawks and Brooklyn Nets and, you know, those sorts of squads. So, one final question for you. I know that DeLon Wright said he'd have a response prepared if the Wizards lost the series, and, you know, he got the better end of the, you know, if he kind of ousted Kelly Oubre at the end. Did he have anything to say to Oubre, who told him that he doesn't play well on the road?
Oh, he said that blocking him at the end of the game was the highlight of the series, which is considering he had, like, a few just, like, legendary Raptors playoff moments in this series.
Yeah.
And blocking the hell out of Kelly Oubre at the buzzer was the number one for him, which is just truly outstanding. Chef's kiss all around. And mwah, like it's, that was his response. So, yeah, I think DeLon Wright got the better of that one for sure.
All right, well, as you watch this Game 7 between the Pacers and the Cavs, I'll just, you know, be crying in a corner for the next 4 months or so. So it's been a pleasure getting to speak with you on, you know, everything under the sun related to this series, and I wish you the best of luck moving forward. I think it's going to be the Cavs that you face. If not, obviously LeBron is out of town, and it's a whole shakeup of the NBA. The East better be won by the Sixers or the Celtics, or else nobody's going to watch the finals, in my mind.
Canada will watch. It'll be bumping up here.
So. All right, get your poutine ready.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Everyone, listen to Locked On Wizards and Locked On Raptors on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, review both shows. It's very nice of you to do. It's helpful. It's all those things. It helps the ego. It helps the algorithms on iTunes and whatnot. So please do that, and make sure you're checking out the entire Locked On Podcast Network as well.
Thanks, Sean. Take it easy, everybody.
Cheers.
You shot right through my heart. Why you let these hoes tear what we had right apart? Oh, I'm so mad. I could have seen this coming right from the start. You should beware, beware, beware of a woman with a broken heart.
Baby, last time calling me baby, last time calling me crazy.